God, I believe that we're here today because we're looking for some beauty. It's a beautiful day outside right now, and the humidity is relatively low, and a bunch of people showed up in a room with no windows. A bunch of people could be anywhere else right now, but they're here, and I believe everyone's here because we're seeking something. We're seeking something that's going to make a difference in our life, and many of us are seeking God, and many of us are seeking other things that are going to hopefully make us feel a little better. But I think the common denominator all of us have is we're looking for a little more beauty, a little more meaningfulness. And I'm praying that today we receive that because we receive you. We come to see who you are in a way that we hadn't before. And so use my words to that effect. And actually, my bigger prayer is that my words would be your words. There would be an accurate reflection of your attitude and your heart. And I pray these things according to the character of Jesus. Amen. How many of us like math? Who likes math? Who doesn't like? Who likes math? Put your hand up. Okay. Who doesn't like math? Who's the normal people? There you go. Let me see all the weird people again. Who likes math? Who's that up again? You know. Actually, two kind of people. There's two kind of, those who can count and those who can't. Actually, I said that wrong. It's supposed to be there's three kinds of people, those who can count, those who can't. My earliest memory of math, or at least my earliest traumatic memory, was when I was in fourth grade. I was in fourth grade, and my dad was trying to get me through my long division homework. And I remember, like yesterday, sitting at the kitchen table with a sheet in front of me that was tear stained because my dad was just drilling in my head. He was upset. He was mad. I wasn't getting it. And I was crying on the paper, tears on the paper. And this paper was all smudged because I kept erasing things and the graphite was smudged. And it was actually holes that were coming up in the paper because I was erasing so much. And my dad is a nuclear engineer. My dad, either math came easy to him or he was good at it. He was natural at it. I mean, master's degrees from Case Western and all these things. And I just think he didn't understand why a kid wasn't naturally getting long division. In that moment, or that whole fourth grade year, my frustration over long division put me on a downward spiral in my attitude towards math that still in many ways exists today. I would go and have geometry class. And to this day, I have no idea why geometry class exists. I think it's the stupidest class that ever is there. It's a ridiculous class. Now, I know geometry is important, but you could tell me that a three-sided triangle has 180 degrees and a four-side deal is 360 degrees. Give me a half-hour class and let me go on my way. Why have to sit for a whole year and memorize theorems that I have no idea how they relate to real life? It just bothers me. It really, really does. I know there's a reason for geometry. I know, but from my perspective, it just was frustrating. So frustrating that when it came time for me to go to college, I was much more committed to having a four-year degree than I was having a specific major. And so when I chose the school I wanted to go to, I had to choose a major. And I went into the school and I said, well, I guess I need to figure this out. And I sat down in the registrar's office or whatever the office was and said, well, let me see what you got. So they laid out all the requirements for these different majors. And I looked for which major had the least math requirements. That's how I chose my major. I said, yeah, I think I'll communications management. I think I will be one. That's it. Let me be communications management. That's what I'll have. And so I chose that because of the low math requirements. Many of us in here today, you don't take God seriously or you have an attitude towards God because you learned God the way I learned math. Because there was someone who hovered over you and judged on you and hammered things into you, and it wasn't a pleasurable experience for you at all. Maybe it was a parent that just was religious to the core and just, you know, drove things into you, and a lot of things driven into you that really weren't about God at all, but was about their religion. And it was a traumatic experience for you. Maybe someone drove religion to you or represented religion who you saw on CNN. And just, oh man, anytime you hear something that smacks of God, you equate it with that person or that viewpoint. Or maybe it was the wacko in the cube beside you that plays the weird music and has the bumper sticker stuck to everything they know. And you just, you go, oh, it just traumatizes you. And so you can't separate God from that person or that mindset. Just like I couldn't separate math from that traumatic event. But I can't deny that math exists. I can't deny that it's real. I just can't. I don't understand fully E equals MC squared. I can't really describe or probably even do the math on Einstein's theory of relativity. But I know that it defines reality. It's just a law. It is. And this basic algorithm in geometry, I can't remember too much about it. I think I could probably do it if you put some numbers in there. But I know that I can't argue with the reality of that basic geometric algorithm. It just is what it is. And when it comes to God, we're all here because there's something about God that you probably can't argue with. You don't like it. You're not sure who he, she, it is. But it's there. It's no matter how many atheistic books that Dawkins or Harris writes that are really brilliant books and very mentally astute, the percentage of Americans that are atheists or agnostics has never changed and it will never change, I don't believe. Because there's this thing planted in us to seek. There's this thing planted in us to know who God is. This thing that, or this person that transcends a mere equation. Jesus talked about a law, and I'm going to talk about a bunch of laws today. And I'm going to call it today the law of seek. That's what this is, the law of seek up here. B equals R plus F. The law of seek says everybody is becoming something. That's B. Everybody is becoming something. And what you become is a function of what you receive and what you follow. Everybody is becoming something. It's the law of seek. And what you are becoming is what you receive and what you follow. So if you're receiving like financial information and stock tips and you're following after them, you are becoming a stock investor. You know, if you are receiving accolades and you are following after getting people to like you, you are becoming a people pleaser. If you are receiving what God has for you and who God is, and you're following after God, then you are becoming like God. You are becoming a Christ follower. It's the law of seek. Everybody is a seeker of something. Here's how Jesus put it once. He said, so do not worry saying, what shall we eat or what shall we drink or what shall we wear? For the pagans, other translations say unbelievers, unconverted, or basically people who aren't seeking after God, run after these things. And your heavenly Father knows that you need them. Jesus says, man, they're receiving and running after, following after all these temporal materialistic things. That's what they're seeking. But Jesus says, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. He says, seek after God. Receive what God has for you. Follow after him, and you're going to become like him in a relationship with him. And there's other things that are going to be coming into your life as well. While I was away on my study break, which this year was a lot more break than study, I finally got around to reading the book that a lot of people have been reading. It's been really hot. It's called The Secret by Rhonda Byrne. Actually, it's called The Secret is what it's called. And she has a great definition in here that defines everybody. It's a word that's a churchy word. It's actually in the Bible. It's a word called discipleship. Everyone is a disciple of something. You were sitting under some philosophy, under something, and becoming like something or some person. That's the law of seek. And here's how she describes everyone's life. She says this, what you are thinking now is creating your future life. You create your life with your thoughts because you are always thinking, you are always creating. What you think about the most or focus on the most is what will appear as your life. A lot of people love this book. A lot of people are bothered by this book. I'm going to talk about this book a little bit today in various ways. What this book all talks about is a specific formula or a specific law. It's all about the law of attraction. And in the law of attraction, her premise is that the way the world is wired is the thing that you think about is the thing that you'll get. The thing that you want is the thing you'll attract yourself. And virtually every example in the book is all about think about a boat, get a boat. Think about $100,000 salary, get a $100,000 salary. And people think, this is awful, this is this and that. But here's the thing. The law of attraction is real. It does exist. It does. There are things about that. And you can see these things in the Bible. I'll give you a couple examples of the law of attraction in the Bible. One is in the book of Job, guy who's doing great things. Everything's going right in his life. And all of a sudden, for a lot of wild reasons, things go really, really bad. And he says, what I feared has come upon me. What I dreaded has happened to me. People say, he attracted those things to himself. In the book of Proverbs, an ancient translation says, as a man thinketh, so is he. There is this truth that the way God has ordered things, or the way the world works, is what you focus on tends to be what you attract, what you get. See, when you understand laws, it's actually very, very freeing. Like my coffee right now, there is a law. It's called the law of gravity. And I don't like the law of gravity if I fall off my tricycle. I don't like skinning my knee. But actually, if you know the law, it actually helps your life work better. So it helps me know when I set my coffee down, it will stay there. You imagine what it would be like if there was no law of gravity? Like, you have to design furniture that had cages over everything. So you could put it in and the cage would be there. Because just maybe sometimes it's going to rise up and spill. Law of gravity is actually a good thing. I just read recently that astronauts, when they come back from being in zero gravity, they have a hard time walking. They lose muscle mass. If you know about gravity and you know it's consistent, it's very helpful to you. Here's the thing though. God can't be deduced to any single law. God establishes laws. God works within laws. But he can't be reduced to any single law. There's a bunch of laws I want to talk about today. And those of you who are note takers, you're going to be frustrated if you try to take notes. Don't try to take notes right now because you're going to get really upset and annoyed because you're not going to fit it all on the page. Let me just give you some examples of some ways, the ways in which reality operates. And when you know this, you know a little bit about God. There's a law of attraction. And the problem with the main problem, I think, with the book, The Secret, is it doesn't give enough of the laws. It only gives one law. There's also the law of labor. There's the law of labor. The law of labor says you can think about whatever you want, but you've got to work at it too. The law of labor says if you are thinking and you want to attract that good date to yourself, the person to date, someone has to labor and actually pick up the phone and say, would you go with me? Yeah, someone actually has to do something to actually work at something. You know, we can think all we want about child sex slavery in South Asia, and we can pray about it. Great, let's think about it. Let's pray about it. But Aaron's got to work about it. Somebody has to labor about it. Somebody has to labor. Somebody has to put one foot in front of the other and show up at places where there is darkness and say, no, this is not right. There is a law. Nothing in your life that you want to see happen is going to happen unless you have a measure of work. So you want to attract a six-figure salary? Great. Get a J-O-B. Get a job. Hit your objectives regularly like clockwork. It's a law of labor. The book of 1 Corinthians chapter 3:8, it says this. The man who plants and the man who waters have one purpose. Each will be rewarded according to his own labor. According to our labor, things happen. Not just the things that we think about and attract, but the things that we labor. That's a law. There's also the law of return. The law of return says, basically, what you labor at, what you do is going to come back to you. It's also called, in some ways, the law of what you sow, you will reap. What you put in the ground is going to be the kind of plant that you can eat from. It's the law of return. Here's how Jesus described this law one time and trying to help people see how life works and how God works. He says, don't judge and you will not be judged. Do not condemn and you will not be condemned. Forgive and you will be forgiven. Jesus says, hey, you know, you don't like being judged? Well, then don't judge people. You don't like being condemned? Then don't condemn people. Forgive and you'll be forgiven. Give and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together and running over will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Jesus says it's the law of the return. Hey, you know what? You don't like the people judge you? Guess what? You judge people. You do. Hey, you don't like the people gossip about you? Guess what? You gossip. You don't like the people take advantage of you? Guess what? You take advantage of people. You don't like the people won't forgive you for your little idiosyncrasies? Guess what? You don't forgive others. It's a law. It's the way it works. What you don't like was being done to you in all reality is because you are doing that in your attitudes and your actions. It's a law. It's the law of return. I returned recently to West Virginia. I hadn't been to West Virginia for a while. And so I was cruising through there a couple weeks ago. And beautiful mountainous country, really cool scenery. And I came up and I saw this bar. It was like a little unique hole-in-the-wall bar. It was log cabin-ish. It was hole-in-the-wall. It was just really strange. Real low ceilings. It was just really weird. So I said, I think I will go there. So I decided to pull in and I went in this bar just to see this experience. And there was this this woman who was the owner-operator of this bar. By the way, you know, West Virginia proves that the Tooth Fairy doesn't exist. Because if the Tooth Fairy existed, long ago she got bankrupt and everybody in West Virginia should be rich. You know? Actually, do you know the most popular pickup line in West Virginia? Hey, babe, nice tooth. That's the most popular. I actually had somebody come up to me afterwards. They gave another good one. They said, hey, you know how you know that toothpaste was invented in West Virginia? I said, no, I don't know how. Because it was invented anywhere else, it would have been called teeth paste. Now, when I was in Pennsylvania, we always told the West Virginia jokes. Interesting, I come to Ohio. You know, some of us are in Kentucky, some of us are in Ohio. I come to Ohio and I find out Ohioans tell Kentucky jokes. I'm told that Kentucky, based on where you live, you either tell West Virginia jokes or Tennessee. Here's one that was a mind-boggling thing to me. A couple years ago, I spoke up in Michigan, and I found out Michigan people make fun of us Ohioans. You know? It may be, what goes around comes around. The law of return. I mean, it just goes around like that. So I'm talking with this woman, and she tells me that she's writing this advice column for this online magazine. I said, really? She said, yeah. I said, well, give me some advice. She said, like right now? I said, sure, I got nothing better to do. Just go ahead. Give me your best shot. I'd like some advice. She said, okay, well, there's a thing called karma. And what you do basically is going to come back to you. And I said, yeah, well, I would call that the law of what you sow, you reap, or the law of return. I'm thinking, karma. The word karma is not in the Bible, but that law is all throughout the scriptures. And I said, yeah, I think karma exists. But I said, you know, I'm a much bigger believer in grace. I'm a big grace guy. I said, you know what grace is? She looked at me like, grace? You mean like Bible kind of stuff? I said, yeah, the Bible kind of stuff. And so I went on to describe what grace is. There's another law, the law of grace. The law of grace says there are things that you won't labor for that you'll get. The law of grace says there's things that should be returned to you that won't be returned to you simply because God is good. The law of grace, you know, if poop happens, grace happens too. Grace is the thing that just happens just because God's good. Right now, over the last minute, your heart is beat anywhere from 45 to 70 beats a minute. It's beat like clockwork. Tick, 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 tick. You did nothing to cause that to tick 70 times and keep you alive. You did nothing. And the more we explore into that, the more doctors try to figure out what causes that electrical impulse, the more of a mystery it is. The heartbeat is an example of grace. You getting a raise when you really didn't work that hard is an example of grace. You lucking out and dating the right person is an example of grace. You're healthy, but things that you didn't work for that come into your life, these are all examples of grace. Jesus says in the book of Matthew chapter 5, he says this, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. He says, man, it doesn't matter whether or not you're good or bad, right or wrong, know God, don't know God. There are things that are going to happen to you that are a blessing. It's called the law of grace. It just happens. You won't even attract good things to you. God will just give you some good things. Maybe not as many good things you'd like. Maybe the person next to you has more good things. But you will get things you didn't labor for and you should not have returned to you. It's who God is. It's actually called grace. Here's how it describes it in the book of John, first chapter. It says this, from the fullness of his grace, we have all received one blessing after another. See, and you can't know God without knowing this law. When you know these laws, when you know these formulas, you know a little bit about the God who established these things. It's the law of grace. And there's also the law of suffering. There's a law of suffering. You know, if you want to attract to you a great date, those of you who aren't married, you're trying to attract the right person. Let me tell you, there's three kind of rings. There's the engagement ring, there's the wedding ring, and there's the suffer ring. There's those... Those three things when you get married, they actually go, you know, in that order. Now, there's a law of suffering. You know what the law of suffering says? The law of suffering says you will suffer. The law of suffering says attract all you want to yourself. Do all these things. Work as hard as you can. Work, you know, the law of return. God, the law of suffering says no matter what you do, you will suffer. You will. Don't have a single cigarette in your whole life and you still might get cancer on your lungs. You will suffer. Got to know just a little bit of Lisa and Aaron's story. We alluded to it before. They got five boys. They had six. A two-year-old that was killed right before Lisa's eyes. Car hit him. I have no idea what that would be like for me to go through that, and I hope I never will have to go through that. You think about, hold on. Innocent little two-year-old. Where's this law of return, man? I mean, Aaron could be making a lot of Jack's an attorney in the United States. You know, he's foregoing a lot of money, going over to a foreign land, working to bring people to slavery. If God should be looking out after anybody, he should be giving extra grace, extra protection to somebody who's bringing little girls to freedom. I mean, where's the law? He thought they're not attracting this to themselves. What? You know, talk about rocking. In fact, your faith would absolutely go away if you didn't understand this law. A law is you and I will suffer. Doesn't matter what you believe, doesn't matter what you do, doesn't matter what you think, doesn't matter how much you pray, doesn't matter how much you tithe or go beyond or how much you serve at Crossroads, how many times you go over to South Africa, you and I will suffer. The book of 1 Peter, it's talking to a bunch of people that are doing all the right things. They've received God, they're seeking after God, they're doing the right things, and here's what it says. Be self-controlled and alert. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Resist him, standing firm in the faith, because you know that your brothers throughout the world are undergoing the same kind of sufferings. Your brothers and sisters, the same ones who were seeking after God in this context, who are receiving God's grace, receiving what God has for them, and following and living their lives the way Jesus would want them to, they're following after, are suffering. There is a law of suffering. And then there's also the law of missed. Last law I'll share with you. There's a lot more laws. I'm just giving you a sampling. And I'll make a point about this. The law of missed says that everyone will just go away and die someday. I heard Jay Leno give a stand-up routine about this a number of years ago. It was pretty funny about it. He said, you ever notice that your reaction to somebody dying is always measured on whether or not they're older or younger than you? He says, like if you're 30 years old, And you hear that somebody who's 50 years old dies, you go, oh, well, you know, 50. You know, that's 50 long years. Man, it's about time. I mean, life doesn't last forever, you know. He goes in this whole bit. And he says, and then if you're 85 and somebody who's 84 dies, you're saying, oh, no, you're kidding. Oh, so sudden. How did that happen? Well, it shocks you. Shocks all of us when I'm at a funeral for somebody who's in single digits. It shocks you. It's always upsetting. It's always awful. But it should never be surprising because there's the law of missed. All of us are like vapor that will just go someday, just gone. It says this in the book of James. It says, now listen, you who say today or tomorrow we'll go to this city or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money. Well, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What's your life? You're a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it's the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. This says, hey, man, go to the Franklin Covey planning session. Set out your objectives. Do your strategic plan. Great, wonderful. Responsible people say, hey, this is how I labor. This is how I plan. If I don't plan, then I'm not going to produce. It's the law of return. Oh, great. But understand there's also this X factor of the mist. Your plans at any moment could just vanish. Boom, all of a sudden, sun comes up and you evaporate. Boom, gone. All of a sudden, this happens. And if you live in the midst of an understanding of the law of the mist, life starts to make more sense. You see, all of us in here probably are attracted to one of these laws. And the law that you're attracted to is probably the one you're saying, oh, stay there for a little longer. Camp out there. Oh, I want to hear more about that. Because to you, that's God. To you, that's how life ought to work. To you, that's how God ought to operate. But the problem is, if you just, you know, adhere to the law of attraction, you know, what happens when bad stuff happens to you? You know what happens? You are left with no other conclusion that other than you were a loser, you brought it on you, it's all your fault. Gosh, how does that work? How does that work? And sorry to use our guests as examples here, but, you know, I talked with them a little bit about this. So what they, how, if they live by the law of attraction only, what are they left to conclude? I attracted the death of my son, I'm a bad person. If you only live by that law. Or if you only live by the law of return, you would say, why is it the people who aren't as good as me get things better than me? And you get bitter towards God. See, if you just live by one of these laws, you will get very, very bitter. In fact, many of us in here, you left God a long time ago because he let down one of your laws. One of the ways in which you think life ought to operate, it didn't operate that way, and you equated God with that, and you left. The book of Psalms is a personal prayer journal, and this guy who's writing his prayers out just regularly would say, God, why is it? Why is it that the unrighteous are prospering? Why is it that the wicked are getting great things and people who are good are getting bad things? Why is that? Well, it's just the law of suffering and it's the law of grace. It's a lot of little everything in there. But see, as you trend to a law, you try to define God down to principles, you're asking for bitterness. And the more bitter you are towards God, the more skeptical you are towards God, is probably the more you equated him with one of these laws. And when that doesn't happen, you think that he let you down. Well, no, you just were adherent to a law and maybe not to God or a seeker of God. You were a seeker of the thing that law promised and not a seeker of God. The amazing thing, too, is that God lives by all these laws. He lives by all of them. Jesus, he's 33 years old. You know, if I want to change the world and I'm God, like Jesus claimed to be, I'm going to map out my life to be about 85 years old. That's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to come at a time when there's jet airplanes that can take me all over the world. And I'm going to come at a time where I have the World Wide Web to master my thing. The guy comes, he just walks around and he asks people to follow him, receive what I'm giving you and follow me. And then the dude dies at 33. 33, he's dead. He's missed. He's gone at 33. How in the world can that happen? How is it that a parent deals when they lose a child? Well, one of the things they realize is that God knows exactly what you're going through because God has lost one too. Because God is in these laws as well. He submits in some way, submits to these laws. He loses a son. Why does he lose a son? Well, because he lives a son who lives the law of attraction. He attracts all the goodness of God because he lives the law of labor perfectly. He only does the right things. He doesn't judge other people. He doesn't go places he shouldn't go. He perfectly walks the law of labor. He perfectly lives the law of grace. He actually lives the law of suffering. He gets nailed to a tree. He also has the law of suffering happening because people are hurling insults at him and misunderstand him. He goes through all that stuff, and he comes to the place where he stretches out his arms at a cross. He gets nailed. He gets beaten, and he dies. Why? He dies to give me and you grace. Because by the way that God operates the laws, all of us should have returned to us punishment from God. Because as soon as we lie, as soon as we do the thing with the person we shouldn't be doing, as soon as we're going the wrong direction, the law of return would say it's time for God to enact justice on us. And sometimes God does. That's another law I didn't talk about. Sometimes he does. But a lot of times he doesn't. Why doesn't he? Because Jesus does the grace thing where he stands in our place and he takes the pain of God, takes our pain on himself. He lives the law of grace. He enacts the law of suffering on himself. He is amidst at 44. He does this beautifully. And God is in and working throughout these laws. See, your law, if it's not God, if you're not after God, if you're after success, if you're after principles, if you're after laws, these laws will be your limits. You want God or do you want laws? When I was first coming to understand who Jesus was, about age 15 or so, there was this paradigm that people always taught me that I've come to realize is a really hurtful paradigm. And it's a paradigm that many of you might have heard of or you might know. Let me tell you what it is. There's this word in the Bible, it's called evangelism. And so I used to believe, and I was taught, that there's this part of your life, this superior life, where you are to be evangelized, or you are to go do evangelism, which meant, in my context, give people information about who God is and give them rational proofs for why God exists and rational proofs for why Jesus existed and all the, there's this kind of mental thing of helping you mentally understand who God is. It's evangelism. And then there's this kind of, this line of faith, this moment you step over the line, this moment you receive, this moment you become a Christian, this moment you're born again, you know, this moment. And then that ushers in the rest of your phase of your life, which is discipleship. And discipleship is when you get more information about who God is. So you get information about why you should receive God, you cross the line, and then your whole process is getting more information about who God is. And so some of us are still in this paradigm right now. So you come to church and you go, well, gosh, how was church good or not? Well, I heard something I never heard before. Ooh, it was good. Ooh, that was deep. Ooh, meaty. Wow. Nothing changed in my life. Didn't follow God. But boy, I never heard that before. Ooh, that's interesting. Ooh, deep. Oh, man, that's cool. Just thought I got fed. Whatever that is. But Jesus, he never lives this paradigm at all. He never goes with someone and says, no, I'm going to give you all the ideas why you should receive me and receive God, and then I'm going to train. No, he does life with people. He does, and he sees people who are fishing. He says, hey, you guys are fishing. Why don't you drop your nets, come with me, and just follow me. And he's had a relationship with them previously, and they do. And then he sees a guy who's hanging out collecting taxes in an impure way, and he looks at him and says, hey, you, leave your tax collecting profession, come and follow me. And we don't ever see with Jesus this like these clear lines where, okay, now you're out, now you're in. Now there is a clear line. There is a clear line when you receive. There is a clear line where you say to yourself and you say to God, I want to receive you, I want to seek after you. But you see Jesus calling people to is to a lifelong of discipleship. What is disciple? Being under me and following me. That's what being a disciple is. That's what being a seeker is, being under and following. What you receive, what you follow, is what you are becoming. It's what you are being discipled by. It is what you are seeking. And that's what God wants you to do. He just says, hey, try this. God doesn't say, believe all of these things, and then you can get in. He says, try these things. Try these things. Try following me. So how does this look practically? I'll give you an example that happens with me. I go out to my yard, and I have a dog. He's 150 pounds. His name is Stanley. Greatest dog in the world. Of course, everyone thinks their dog is the greatest dog in the world. Stanley's 150 pounds. And so when I go out and shovel the yard, I got some work to do. You know what I'm saying? And I don't do it all that often. I mean, it's kind of one of my grunt jobs at the house. So I'll do it maybe once a week or something like that. And so when I'm going out, everyone knows, don't walk in the lawn. Go on the sidewalks. It's just you're taking your shoes in your own hands to go onto the thing. So I'm showing, and you know when I go out there, it's very obvious when Stanley has been there. 150 pound dog, you know, it's very obvious. And you know what else is obvious? It's obvious that there's other dogs doing their deal on my lawn. There's these like little rabbit pellet things in there. These, relatively speaking, and you know what? I get really mad when other dogs from our neighborhood put their dookie in my yard. It really bothers me. Now, I understand why if you're an owner of a dog in my neighborhood, why you would think it would not be that big of a deal. Because you're probably thinking, well, you know, he's got that big thing there. What's my little pile here? And there's no need for me to carry a bag around when there's Brian's yard over there. So, and of course, some of you in here are probably bringing your dog by my house. You know what I would call you? I would call you my enemy. That's what I would call you. I would call you my enemy. And God, Jesus, one of the things Jesus says, he said, when you follow me, you will love your enemies. See, you're persecuting me is what you're doing. You're giving me more work, making my life more. And you know what Jesus says? Jesus says, pray for those who persecute you. So here's what happens, honestly. It's a real life situation. When I'm out there, I get all these fantasies of how to get back at you. Some of my ideas are, and I know some of these folks are, I actually think to myself, maybe I'll like lock Stanley up all day. I'll feed him raw meat for a whole day. He's real, you know, house broken. He won't do anything in there. And then I'll give him some milk of magnesia and chain him to the doorknob of that other house. I'll just let him hang out there all day. I just let him hang out there all day. I think about it. You know what? When you're in this, it feels good to think these things. It's really, you're getting like a little. And then I realize that I'm acting some kind of sick fantasy or vengeance. And I think to myself, you know what? This stuff here is a reminder to me to pray for my neighbors. This is a reminder to me to think about them and to love on them. See, Jesus says, pray for your enemies. You don't have to be fully convinced that works. But I tell you right now, your enemies, it's not getting any better. You thinking bad thoughts about them and wanting to get back. You still are bitter. You are attracting bitterness to yourself. You're still, it's not helping. So Jesus says, you just try it. Just try it. When something like this happens, pray for the success of the person you're upset with. Pray for them. Really. Pray that they get a raise. Pray they date somebody better looking than you. Pray that the good thing, and you'll find as you fall, when you do that, you're receiving Jesus' instruction. You're following after, and you will find that it works. It's an amazing, amazing thing. See, you either want the law or you want the lawgiver. That's a huge thing for us to decide. Do we want the law? Do I want the principles to make life work so it works for me? Or do I want the lawgiver? Do I want the creator? Do I want God? See, God is, one of the reasons I don't want you to take notes is because I don't want you going out of here saying, okay, I got to do that one better. I want you going out of here, and I want you living your life so that you want God, not that you want laws. You want God. You want to know Him. You want to be receiving from Him. You want to be following after Him, even when you don't fully understand it. And somewhere in the process of it, a moment happens and you receive. A couple weeks ago, I was in town, but I was still officially off to be off premises, but I wanted to come for the Go Mama Lodi service, the recap of all the people who went over to South Africa to serve, and then we're going to tell some of their stories. But I didn't want to be seen, so I got these, my daughter's big sunglasses, real ugly sunglasses. They're like this big, and I put them on my head, and I put a baseball hat on, and my beard was growing, so I was a little scruffy. I didn't want to be seen. I didn't want to interact with anybody, so I'm coming in. What do you know? The first person who sees me says, "Hey, Brian!" Oh, shh, quiet. So I went up and I sat in that very first row on the balcony. And first 15 minutes, I'm boo-hooing the whole service. I'm like, I'm touched deeply by what's happening. Not one of those ugly cries, but just, you know, internally, I'm really deeply touched. And then the end of service, Chuck, who was speaking, talking about these stories, told this incredible story about a woman who was on our team and was teaching music. She was giving voice lessons. And throughout that week, she had to have a translator because some of the South Africans who were in her class didn't speak English. They spoke Zulu, so she had a translator that was translating for them. And then at the end of the week, these people came and thanked her through the translator for the last couple days speaking in Zulu so they could hear and understand better. And she said, I don't speak in Zulu. What are you talking about? She said this to the translator. And then people said, well, we heard you in Zulu the last couple days. It's interesting. As I read that, I saw something in the Bible I'd never seen before. This happened once in the book of Acts, where God wants to get His message of grace to people who didn't understand the Aramaic of that day. They were in different languages all over the place. And so there was this gift of tongues. And it's interesting, now reading that, it's not clear whether or not people actually spoke in a language they'd never learned, or if people heard in language that they did know. Fascinating. This is studyable. This isn't like I read it on the internet and you can go and read it on the Inquirer. No. This happened. You can go talk to these people. This really happened. This did happen. It's verifiable, certifiable. And I sat there going, man, God still sometimes might break a law, because the law would say you have to learn a language before you do it. No. God also transcends laws. God can also sometimes override a law. This is amazing. And God, or Chuck said, I thought was awesome. He said this. He said, you know, I don't understand that, but I believe it. I don't understand E equals MC squared, but I believe it. I don't fully, I'm closer on this one, but even though I don't fully understand this one, you know, but I believe it. And I'm telling you, you're not going to understand everything about God, but if you deduce God to figuring out the laws and having all the rational arguments and having all the tough Bible verses figured out and all of this, there comes a point where you say, okay, I don't understand all this stuff, but I just believe and I want to receive and I want to follow. I'm going to invite the band to come out and we're going to do a song right now. And when we do this song, you're invited to sing. We're going to put words up on the screen, but when we do these things, the appropriate response is for you. And the appropriate response for you might be to think about these words or to soak in the moment or to sing it. Don't be worried about what other people are doing. Just worry about, in that moment, are you receiving what God has for you and are you looking to follow? And so why don't we stand right now? Let's stand. And before we sing a song, let me pray for you. God, I am praying for all the law seekers and the law keepers in here, who are also the frustrated, who are also the disenfranchised, who are those who have seen slivers of you, but not fully you. I'm praying for those who are bitter because the law let them down. I'm praying for those who have been shunned by law keepers and therefore have shunned you. I'm praying for those who don't understand at all, but really want to receive and want to believe, and I'm asking you continue to be patient and you continue to give grace. And this whole thing that we do, it is an adventure. It's not a classroom environment where we come in and we learn and all of a sudden, ooh, I got an A in the test. Too many people who know you try to reduce you to an Excel spreadsheet and a pass-fail grade and an accumulation of knowledge. This is a following process. This is an adventure. And I pray for people who are standing right now that they would come closer to desiring the adventure of seeking and following and receiving you.